picture up here for you to enjoy today as they're posing next to a totem pole. Oh, boy. That was just 2 years ago, believe it or not. I'm not sure who that third guy is in the middle there. But this is a part of God's wild kingdom. Marlon Perkins' wild kingdom, but God's wild kingdom. We've been talking about flexibility. And what does it mean to be flexible? We're going to spend one more night on that. And this year, with all the changes, well, we need to be flexible. I'm going to turn this on. Are you flexible enough to turn that on? Just in time to cough on it. You know you have the microphone on because you do this instead of covering your mouth when you cough. Never mind. That sounds good, doesn't it? And we'll get that out of the way. But we need to learn not to, and boy, we have no choice this year. I hope that we're learning from this. You know, with all the stuff that happens in your life and all the things that are going in the world, you can look at it in a negative way or you can look at it in a positive way. I just choose to see it a positive thing instead of a negative thing. And we ought to be flexible and not so set in our ways, in our routine, that we can't change. We ought to be able to change anything at a moment's notice. And some folks have got everything planned out in their day and their week and their month and their year. And that's fine, but be flexible and be ready to change at a moment's notice. And as we talk about flexibility, we've already talked about, and the kids, you're looking at your notes so you can remember what we talked about already. A few weeks ago, we talked about the white-tailed deer and Moses and sensing and adapting to the wishes of the one that I serve. In Colossians chapter 3 and verse number 22, servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart for fearing God. And then 2 weeks ago, we talked about the ruby-throated hummingbird. And Eliezer, by the way, this afternoon we had a hummingbird. I tell you, they come in our yard all the time and just kind of pick and choose the flowers. They never use a feeder. I don't know what it is. They're afraid of that red juice that's in there. Don't drink the Kool-Aid, they're telling each other. But one of them sat up in the tree for the longest time and just sat up there cleaning himself, sticking out his tongue. I got a few videos, but too bad we already talked about the hummingbird and the Eliezer, Abraham's servant. We talked about conserving my time and energy to complete my priorities is a part of flexibility. And the verse we gave in 1 Thessalonians 4:11, can anybody say those verses? Or you memorize them? You're jotting them down, some of you are looking at me, huh? What? 1 Thessalonians 4:11, and that you study to be quiet and do your business, and that you work with your own hands as we commanded you. Then last week, we talked about, what was the animal last week? One of the kids tell me, the aardvark? No, that's the one I just put the picture of up there. What was it? The American bittern. Good job. The American bittern. And who is the Bible character we talked about? One of the kids tell me? Jacob and Esau. All right. Good job. As we talk about flexibility, remaining free to accept the best course of action. And Proverbs 16:9 says, a man's heart deviseth his way, but the Lord directeth his steps. Now tonight, don't tip over. Sometimes that happens when I bend over too fast. That's what the pulpit's here for. Connor steps to the side, I tip over once in a while. So, all right. Flexibility is changing plans if unexpected conditions require it. Changing my plans if something unexpected comes up, like COVID-19 or something. Changing my plans. It seems like every day plans change, and we need to just go with it. Learn to be flexible. And we're going to give you a long verse that you probably know already. You're probably not going to be able to write this whole verse down, but many of you, you should know this verse at least. Philippians chapter number 4. Verses 6 through 7, let's read it together. It barely fit up on my notepad up there. Philippians 4, 6 through 7. Be careful for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God, and the peace of God that passeth all understanding shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Philippians 4, 6 through 7. How many know that verse already? Oh, a few of you did. Yeah, whatever. But we encourage you to learn. Boy, that is a great verse. That's a great chapter, actually. That's a great book to memorize. What? You can memorize a chapter? You can memorize a book? Well, you ought to work on it. And that is a great truth. Part of being flexible and not being upset, not being worried, not being anxious. Be careful, anxious, worried about nothing. But in everything, through prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving. Praise the Lord, all my plans have changed. Is that the way you act when everything turns upside down? We ought to, but we get so anxious and we get so frustrated when change comes. Now, the Bible character, before we get to our animal, I want to make sure I say this right, so I'm just going to read what I jotted down. A son will often try to be strong where his father was weak. But if he's bitter, his attitudes and actions will become just like his father. You ever watch people, I'm never going to be like my dad. And especially if they're a bitter person, they end up in the same situation their dad was. And by the way, here's a great definition I came across. Bitterness is a result of not recognizing the hand of God working through our circumstances or working through our enemies. God brings enemies into our life for a reason. And if we resent them and get angry at them, and that causes bitterness, and we'll never be what God wants us to be. Bitterness is a result of not recognizing the hand of God working through our enemies. A 25-year-old king tried to be strong where his father was weak in the Old Testament, but he held bitterness in his heart. This man viewed the enemies of his father as independent agents. They were actually individuals whom God stirred up to remove his father, who had rejected the word and the counsel of the Lord. This bitterness of this young man decreased his ability to see God's power and program and forced him to rely on his own strength. And the tragic result was an inability to be flexible when conditions required it, and his end was almost exactly the same as his father's because he failed to learn and he failed to be flexible. Now, the animal we're going to talk about tonight, we'll get back to that Bible character in a little bit. Everybody together now. Aww, the little bunny. Oh, hit two for one right there. Well, that's a common rabbit that you see. We've got all kinds of rabbits in our backyard, and little ones, big ones, and while kids are around, sometimes I will catch them and let them play with them, just because they're fun. And who doesn't like to hold a little bunny rabbit, huh? A bunny. Now, there are many different kinds of rabbits. We're used to seeing one particular kind of rabbit as far as a wild rabbit around here. How many of you have ever tried to tame a wild rabbit? Can't be done. But we always try, don't we? I can speak from experience. You can never get them to last more than 24 hours. Trust me. We've tried many times, but that just doesn't happen. Best just to leave them alone and look at them. But there are a lot of different kinds of rabbits, and one of them, his name is Harvey. How many know the Jimmy Stewart movie? This rabbit's called the Pooka. I saw one the other day. And there he is. There's Harvey. Somebody taught me how to do something worthless on my telephone, so I played with it for a few minutes. All right. Worthless but fun. We're going to talk tonight about actually not a rabbit, but a hare. What's the difference between a rabbit and a hare? There's a picture of a hare. And by the way, it gets confusing. They're, as far as I'm concerned, they're basically the same thing. It's like, what kind of snake is that crawling on the ground? It's a snake. It's a deadly cobra. I don't care if it's a garden snake. They're all the same. But a rabbit and a hare. As you can see, if you're picturing a rabbit in your backyard, he's got bigger ears. He's got longer legs. He's usually a little bit larger in size. He lives a more solitary life. The young hare is born able to defend itself. A young rabbit is pretty much helpless when it's born for the first few days. And the rabbit or the hare, I call it a rabbit. It's actually a hare, but this is the actual one that we're going to talk about today. This is a very unique rabbit. It's actually referred to as the official name. Well, not the scientific name. The official name is a varying hare. How many have ever seen one of those? How many know what one is? It looks similar, in a way, to the rabbits that are around here, at least this time of year. It looks similar to the rabbits you're used to seeing around here. When we were kids, we used to go to Canada every year as a family. And especially when I got younger, we went way up north, and we saw a lot of varying hares, except we called them a name that they're more commonly called to is snowshoe rabbits. That's the name that we always referred to them as. They're sometimes called a brush rabbit or a brush hare, a northern hare, a snow rabbit, a swamp jackrabbit, many different names that they're referred to. And maybe one of the more unique things about this particular rabbit or hare is in the wintertime, that's what it looks like. It changes color. Oh, fuzzy and warm and this is going to be an all night, all right? And when it actually changes color, it's a molting process. It just doesn't his hair doesn't turn white and then change back in the fall, but it actually molts it. It loses its hair and replaces it with hair of different color. So you can tell the hair grows pretty fast on this thing. And it's triggered, much like a lot of people around here think that the colors of the trees change in the fall because the days are getting colder. It's actually because they're getting shorter. And that's what triggers the color of the hare, the snowshoe rabbit, as I refer to him as. And when it changes colors, it looks... I want to say this, first of all. I'm getting ahead of myself. One of the things about the snowshoe rabbit is the size of its feet. I was going to bring my snowshoes, but I thought Garrett could just hold up his shoe. That's what my snowshoes look like. I like to go snowshoeing, and their feet are very large. And if you look at them close, if you can see it from there, on the bottom of their feet, you don't see anything but hair. It's all fuzzy, and they're bigger, and that helps them to stay above the snow when they're walking in the snow better than a normal rabbit would do. And when the rabbit changes colors, it looks something like this. It'll start from the feet up. Usually this would be in the fall or in the springtime as it's changing back, reverting back to its color. It kind of changes. The white comes first in its feet, so it looks like a cat that would be Bootsy or something, or Boots or whatever. That would be a good name for that rabbit. But that's kind of what they look like, their feet, and then their ears will change colors, and then the rest of their body catches up eventually. Now, one of the things about this rabbit, I'm going to read the verse. I'll read the verse. You don't have to look to it. Deuteronomy chapter number 14 and verse number 7, when God talks about clean and unclean animals. And you understand that during the Jewish law, they had certain animals that were unclean. Thank God we live in the New Testament. We can eat anything. We can eat pigs if we want to. Huh? But Deuteronomy 14, verse number 7 says, "Nevertheless, these shall ye not eat of them that chew the cud or of them that divide the cloven hoof, as the camel and the hare and the coney, for they chew the cud, but they divide not the hoof. Therefore, they are unclean to you." Now, of course, a hare has feet instead of a hoof. What he's talking here is the animals that are clean and unclean, like a cow or a lamb or a deer. They've got the cloven of the hoof that's divided, and they chew the cud. But some people look, and I mention that just because of this, some enemies of the gospel try to find fault with the Bible and try to find fault with God, often point out, well, a rabbit doesn't chew its cud. He doesn't have the same digestive system as other animals that chew their cud. A cow will swallow, I don't know how many stomachs a cow has. They're kind of gross, if you ask me. They have 4 stomachs, 7 stomachs, 12 stomachs, kind of like some people I know. They got a stomach that goes from here down to their toes. They regurgitate things and chew it, but a hare doesn't do that. But the Bible refers to them as chewing their cud. And people say, well, God made a mistake there. A hare doesn't chew his cud. But actually, they do, but just different than other animals. You see, when they go to the bathroom, we're used to seeing little rabbit pellets. Huh? And they have two different kinds of pellets. One's a bigger one that's dry and has no food value, but the other one's soft and chewy. Huh? Just like little kids when you're potty training them. Huh? He comes back and he goes, he has seconds. That's what he does. That's how he chews his cud. It just doesn't stay inside of his body the whole time. But he comes back to it later, so they technically they do chew their cud, just like God said. So I just point that out because it's kind of a fun fact. And it's also showing that...
Thanks.
That's a good picture. I can tell you what I learned of cows from Burger King. How many heard that in the news today? Heard a little clip on the news today. Burger King's selling, they saw it as a way to advertise. You know, one of the greatest causes of global warming or climate change, whatever it's called this week, is cow flatulence is the proper word. And they're burping as they chew their cud. So Burger King is promoting they're using more environmental friendly beef. They decided that the anti-beef burger or whatever didn't work, so they've learned that you can feed cows, lemongrass to reduce their their ozone contributions by 30%. So, but just in case you're worried, that's the kind of news that I like to follow, okay? All right? You can talk about your politics all you want to, but I've got more important things to talk about. This was a forbidden animal. And as you can tell by all rabbits, their sense of hearing is something that's very good. They have great hearing, and that serves as part of their protection. So they can hear when a predator is coming, and they can hop, 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 little bunny hop, and get away. And also their sense of smell is very keen, and that helps finding food. They can they starve them. Now, their sight is very poor. They're a pretty sight, but they have poor sight, poor vision. And part of the reason for that is, of course, their eyes are on each side of the head, so they can see both directions, but they can't see very clearly. What they can see is movement more than anything, but they can't see distinctly what that movement is. And part of the reason for that is their pupils don't constrict. They don't get small. If you look at a rabbit's eyes, its pupils are always big. You ever have your eyes dilated? I had some eye surgery. They got to dilate your eyes once in a while. Boy, that's hard to drive. It's hard to see on a sunny day, and you can't get sunglasses dark enough. And when you do get dark enough sunglasses, everything just kind of blurry. That's kind of like what their vision is all the time. So as you can tell, they can. It's obvious that they would see best in the evening time or just before the sun comes up and after the sun goes down. Now, I'm going to tell you something. How the snowshoe rabbit, I'll call him, displays flexibility, how he changes his plans. This is something that's unique about this rabbit. It fits our illustration purposes tonight. And of course, in the wintertime, it needs energy to avoid predators and to care for its developing young. This is a picture of what they would look like in early spring where there's still a lot of snow on the ground. And for any animal, for those that I like to spend time outside and know the realities of animal. Winter is a very tough time for animals, mostly because they have a hard time finding food. And if we have a lot of snowfall, they have a very difficult time getting under the snow to find the food. And, of course, they have good noses, so they can sometimes smell the food underneath the snow. A bigger threat to them is if there's a drought in the summertime, there's not enough food that makes it through the fall because what they need is young grass and young twigs that are growing up. And if there's none of that because of the dry weather, they are next to starvation. In fact, many of them don't make it through the winter because of starvation. Now, one of the things that in the early springtime, of course, a mother hare is carrying its young. And if you can picture, it's been a long, difficult winter. She's barely surviving. She's a young rabbit. This is her first litter that she's going to have this spring. She's not sure if she's going to survive, if her babies are going to survive. She can't find enough food. to make it. So God put something in them that's very unique, that's very unusual when you think about it. It's called resorption. That embryo that's inside of her body, those little babies inside of her body, instead of having them stillborn, her body literally reabsorbs them back into her body. That's kind of unusual. And that allows her to find enough energy, enough food to survive, because she can't eat enough for herself and her babies if it's a rough, a lean year or spring. And that allows her to survive without having to worry about feeding her newborn babies. If that were not the case, both would end up dying. She would not survive, and her babies would not survive if she could not get enough nutrition. And therefore, she shows to us, and of course, just some of the general things about this hair show us some general things about flexibility. But changing your plans if unexpected conditions require it. Everything's changed. You're looking forward to starting a family, but no, everything's changed. We're going to do this different, and God's designed her in a way that it's not going to harm her. In fact, it actually serves as something that gives her extra strength, as that fetus is reabsorbed back into her body, and she's able to survive, yet she bears no young that spring. Now, we're going to look at a character in the Bible in 2 Chronicles chapter number 25. In 2 Chronicles chapter number 25, and we're going to look at a Bible character that also displays to us flexibility, changes plans if unexpected conditions require it, or failing to change plans when unexpected conditions require it. King Joash was the eighth king of the divided kingdom of Judah. If you're familiar with the divided kingdom of Israel and Judah, he was 7 years old when he became king. He reigned for 40 years. He lived to be the age of 47 as he reigned for 40 years. The Bible says that Joash did right until Jehoiada the priest died. His personal friend and priest, Jehoiada, kept him in line, literally, spiritually. When Jehoiada died, Joash began to go in a spiritual spiral. He turned to idolatry. And like many of the kings, he started out good but ended bad. In his idolatry, a prophet named Zechariah, who was actually not the... there's different Zechariah and different Jehoiadas in the Bible. He was the son of Jehoiada, the priest. This prophet came and warned Joash of the apostasy, and his idolatry was going to cause destruction not only in his life but in his family and in the kingdom. And he didn't want to hear what the prophet said. So the men of his empire, servants stoned the prophet, and Joash approved the stoning of this prophet, he completely forsook the God that he once served. Later on, his life ended when his own servants conspired against him and murdered him and executed him. His son, Amaziah, is who I want to look at today. Amaziah, his son, comes to the throne. And he says, I'm going to be different than my dad. I'm going to be more careful than my dad. I'm going to do right. I'm going to follow the Lord. I'm going to obey the Lord. And yet, he had something in his heart that he never dealt with. Amaziah was 25 years old. He reigned for 29 years. In 2 Chronicles 25 and verse number 1, we're introduced to him. In verse number 2, notice what it says about Amaziah. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, but it'd be good if there was a period instead of a comma right there. He did what was right in the sight of the Lord, but not with a perfect heart. He did right, but he was untrusting. Literally is what the word means. he didn't completely obey. Now, he didn't know what was wrong in his heart, but there was something that was missing. He had, I liken it to a bad attitude. Sometimes young people go, I want to live for God, but I've got a bad attitude. By the way, adults do that too. Sometimes adults, maybe it's seen this way, and we don't see it ourselves. And Amaziah certainly never saw it himself. But he was bitter because of the circumstances surrounding his father's death. He said, I'm not going to do what my dad did. I'm going to keep serving the Lord, and I'm going to make sure I serve the Lord all my life. So this event that took place in my father's, his own servants took his life. And I'm not going to go that direction. But he was holding on to bitterness, and he was wanting to avenge the death of his father. In verse number, let me give you this. He did right, but he never got past his bitterness. This is the first thing I see about Amaziah. He did right, but he never got over, never got past the bitterness of what happened to his dad. Sometimes God's working in our life, but we take it so personal that we don't see that it's the hand of God working in our life to teach us something. Now, Amaziah was facing an enemy called the Edomites. The Edomites were the children, the descendants of who? Does everybody remember from last week we talked about him? The Edomites were descendants of Esau. Brother Rex needs a piece of candy, doesn't he? I got to get you a Reese's. And they were descendants of the Edomites, the children of Esau, generations down the road. Of course, they were a constant nuisance to the people of God. So Amaziah realized if he's going to destroy the Edomites, he's going to need some help. So he went to Israel. Remember, the kingdom's divided, Israel and Judah. He's the king of Judah. He went to Israel, which were completely out of the will of God, and he hired 100,000 soldiers to bolster up his army. And he hired 100,000 Israelites to do battle against the Edomites. Now, after he did this, and of course, you can imagine the expense that it took to hire. Now, soldiers in those days, and actually until fairly recent time in history, were not given weapons to use. They weren't given the training, but they were given really a small salary, no disability or nothing. If they died, they died. That was it. Nothing like what we think of the military today. But the one thing they had to look forward to, they had just a small salary for joining up with the army, for signing up, which 100,000, that's a lot of money, even if it's just a small amount. But the greatest thing a soldier had was the hope that he's going to conquer somebody and get all the spoils he can take and take them home. And some of them made out pretty well from that, but most of them didn't do very well. But that was the desire of each of these soldiers. And now Amaziah had hired 100,000 Israelites. And a preacher came to warn him. He said, you hired the enemies of God to fight the enemies of God. Not a smart thing to do. You see, his bitterness had clouded his judgment. Verse number, we go to chapter number 25 and verse number 7. It says that there came a man of God to him saying, O king, let not the army of Israel go with thee, for the Lord is not with Israel, to wit, with the children of Ephraim, to fight the children of Ephraimite, the Edomites. The nation of Israel has rejected God, and you hired them to fight against the enemies of God. So that's not a smart thing to do. Well, Amaziah, I got to give him credit for this. He did show some flexibility in changing his mind. He dismissed the 100,000 soldiers, which, by the way, became a bad thing, but it seemed like a good thing to begin with. We'll get to that in a little bit. But he let these 100,000 soldiers go. He said, sorry, guys, we don't. And by the way, the preacher said, well, you know, and his argument was, you know, I paid all these guys all this money. I'm out this money, and now I'm out the army. And the preacher said, well, you trust God. God's going to win the battle for you. And he showed a little bit of character and courage or spiritual strength there and some flexibility in trusting God, but he still had very little spiritual sensitivity. And he went out and defeated the Edomites, killing, and I'd make a long story short, he killed 20,000 in the battle and 10,000 in the battle and 10,000, killed a total of 20,000 Edomites in the battle. And then Amaziah compromised. He brought some of the idols home as spoils of war. In verse number 14 of chapter number 25, look at the verse here. It says, "And wherefore the anger of the Lord was kindled against Amaziah, and he sent unto him," verse number 14, I skipped the verse. "It came to pass that after that Amaziah was come from the slaughter of the Edomites, that he brought the gods of the children of Seir, and set them up to be his gods, and bowed down himself before them, and burned incense unto them." He brought these idols home, it wasn't long before he started worshiping them. And a preacher came and warned him of what he was doing. Though he showed some flexibility, he still had a lot of carnality because of the bitterness that was deep-seated in his spirit. Now, the third thing I want you to see is that his judgment was clouded by vengeance. He's still out to get and to protect and to avenge those that are against him. And he, of course, already avenged when he first came to the throne those that were responsible for his father's death. But he's still clouded by that vengeance, that rage, that unforgiving spirit. The disgruntled soldiers that he released, remember he released 100,000 Israelites? When they left, and again, their hope was to go into battle and win some jewels and to bring back some of the spoils of the war. But now they trained, they've disciplined themselves, they've got ready to go to the battle, but now they're turned away just before the battle begins. So they're upset. So as they go back to Jerusalem and they're marching through Judah, and as they're marching through Judah, they come from to one city to the next and start to kill and plunder the people of those cities in Judah. The people they were supposed to be fighting with, now they're fighting against. So much that it almost destroyed the entire nation of Judah because of the army that he had hired originally to fight alongside of them. And God said, "You shouldn't have done that to begin with." You see, his judgment was clouded by the vengeance that he was holding and the reality. He didn't want to be like his dad. He was, of course, upset at Judah. He sent a threat to Joash, who was a king of Israel, whose name was also Jehoash or Joash. He's recognized in the book of Second Chronicles as Joash. Other places he's remembered as Jehoash. Jehoash, or Joash, as he's told in our narrative here, warned him, "You better stop. You better not mess with Israel. After all, we still have that 100,000 soldiers that you hired because you knew your army wasn't good enough. That army can whoop you too." In fact, in 2 Chronicles chapter 25, and look at verse number 20, "But as Amaziah would not hear, he wouldn't listen to him. It was a very credible threat, but he said, now, I'm going to get back at those guys." You see, he was still holding on to that revengeful spirit. That bitterness that made Amaziah seek revenge made him inflexible. He wanted revenge for what those returning soldiers did in his empire. And he wasn't going to let it go. He's not going to forget it. He's going to hold them responsible, and I'm going to go after them, even if it means my death, and even if it means the destruction of my empire. Of course, Israel eventually attacks Jerusalem, the capital of Judah. In 2 Chronicles chapter number 25 and verse number 22, we read of how that battle ended. Verse 22 points out that Judah was put to the worse. That means they lost. They were on the losing side. Verse number 23 says, "And Joash, the king of Israel, took Amaziah, the king of Judah. He took him as a prisoner of war. Verse number 24, he took all the gold and the silver and all the vessels that were found in the house of God and Obed-Edom and the treasures of the king's house and the hostages also and returned to Samaria, which was the capital of Jerusalem during the divided kingdom. Amaziah was taken captive. Now, just a couple of years later, or we're not sure exactly the time frame here, it wasn't too long before Joash died and his son became the king. So at that time, Amaziah was released from prison and allowed to go back and to be the king of Judah again. And, of course, there wasn't much left of his kingdom. Wasn't much left as far as soldiers, military might, finances. The thing was pretty much in ruins. And he was able to live for 15 more years and reign for another 15 years, yet his reign was filled with shame and disgraced in many ways. And ultimately, and this is the fourth thing, because Amaziah proved himself to be inflexible, because he failed to trust and forgive and sought revenge, he ended up repeating the sins of his father. Something he promised he would never do. What my dad did in turning against God, he already did that. What my dad did, I've heard many young people, especially young men, I'll never be what my dad is. 9 times out of 10 or more, they end up just like their dad because they reject the grace of God and hold on to that bitterness and that hatred that they had toward dad or something in their past that they never let go of. He repeated the sins of his father. His life ended just as bad or worse than his father's life. In verse number 27, it says, "Now after the time that Amaziah did turn away from following the Lord, they made conspiracy against him." Who's the they? His servants, the people in his household. They conspired against him in Jerusalem, and he fled to Lachish. His own people, his own faithful servants, just like what had happened to his father, he fled to Lachish, but they sent to Lachish after him and slew him there. They killed him in Lachish. He didn't receive a king's burial. He didn't receive the honor and the recognition of a king because he proved himself inflexible. Because of the things that took place in his life, he refused to change and to trust God and to follow God. Instead, he held on to his own idea and said, "This is what I am, and I'm not going to be like the people before me. I'm going to be different." And he trusted in his own strength instead of trusting God. He loved the Lord, but he served the Lord, but he held on to things that he should have let go. He should have changed. He should have allowed God to change him. He should have let go of that bitterness and learned that those circumstances that resulted in his father's demise and destruction and ultimate death were a warning to him. But instead, he took them as a personal attack. And he never let go of them and ended up being the same thing as his father and ended the same way that his father did. Oh, God, help us to learn to be flexible. And again, flexible is changing plans if unexpected conditions require it. My life didn't turn out the way I planned, but God knew what was best. And I trust in God, and I'm careful for nothing. I'm not anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, I'm going to let my requests be made known unto God. And the peace of God that passeth all understanding. I'm not upset. I'm not destroyed by circumstances. But I have the peace of God that passeth all understanding. Shall keep our hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Father, we